¡Montiel!
Ronaldinho takes and David Seaman's cut off his line and Brazil take the lead.
Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. Presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, NRG, Quanta, and Visit Sugarland. Thanks for joining me tonight. We stream at ESPN975.com. I'm your host, Glenn Davis. We're fresh off of Soccer Matters last night, where we had Pat Onstad, who's represented the Canadian national team internationally, and Jack McGlynn, who potentially can make this 2026 World Cup roster for the United States and be a part of something just in rarefied air. So it was great having them on the show last night, and we continue it tonight with Destination 2026. We appreciate you tuning in or catching this on the podcast. Podcast always found at ESPN975.com, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. All right, let's hit a few basics. Obviously, you go around town and you can see the number of differing changes that are occurring downtown, particularly in the area around Edo. There's green space being put in. There's roads being worked on. There's all these things going on for the World Cup, which we will be hosting here in Houston at Energy Stadium. 72,000 seats plus. December 5th, we find out kind of who is going where and the draw. We have seven matches in Houston. Five of these will be group stage. Two will be knockout. Two teams will continue their World Cup dreams in the knockout phases here, and two will have it ended right here in Houston. June 14th through July 4th, 500,000 visitors expected. I believe it'll be more, but that might be a conservative number. I think a lot of that will depend on also who the draw is, but I do think a lot of people, as mentioned on this show before, will come to Houston, kind of base out of Houston, because it's an easy place to get to Kansas City, to get to Dallas. We're in the middle of the country. For those who are going to be taking on and taking in games in a variety of markets. Now, if you go back to 1994, the World Cup games were played in the Cotton Bowl. Well, now they're played in Jerry Jones's palace up there. And, of course, we got the beautiful Energy Stadium, which has had some upgrades. So beautification, security, all going to be a big part of it. You heard we had a support city named. Each market has a support city named. Well, it's going to be Sugarland. Visit Sugarland. So congratulations to Sugarland, and there'll be a lot of World Cup activity out there. Of course, they have an airport out there, so a lot going on. If you want merchandise, it's FWC2026Houston.com. FWC2026Houston.com. Also for volunteering. So if you visit the FIFA World Cup 2026 Houston volunteer page, there's a portal there. You can start an application if you're interested in volunteering for the event. They're going to need, I think, 5,000 volunteers. You complete the application. You do it online. You got to do both in order to be considered. Then there'll be a recruitment event. You'll participate in training sessions if you're selected. But they're going to do a big background check on you. I guarantee you that. So be ready for that. Comply with the tournament policies and the requirements, and you might just be one of the volunteers on a historic amount of games being played here in Houston, 7 in the World Cup. So if you become a volunteer, you get a World Cup uniform, certificate, meals, refreshments during shifts. You don't get tickets. So if you're thinking this is your way to get tickets to games, that would be a strict no. More information, the volunteer application. Again, you go to the FIFA Volunteer Community website or Houston Host Committee website. I'll give that to you again, FWC2026Houston.com. Also get merchandise over there as well. FIFA.com for tickets, LSSE.net for tickets as well. Hospitality packages over there at Lone Star Sports and Entertainment. So that's the volunteer information. Now, let's go a little bit more on tickets, because I decided to do this first segment more about just some of the things that are out there and just kind of re-putting it out there. You register, and you probably already did this. You entered the ticket draw at the FIFA website. The first phase, it was a Visa cardholder pre-sale draw, which required pre-registration. Then there were lottery phases, and a general sale is going to follow. And that'll start around October for the general public. Now, I don't know about resale and marketplace options. I'm not sure about those. I would be careful with those. Some of that's a bit of a mystery to me, but the tickets are available through verified ticket marketplaces. So if you've had good experiences at Vivid, StubHub, SeatGeek, these platforms list group stage and knockout round tickets already for Energy Stadium in Houston. It's various seating options, buyer protection, and the pricing's over there. Like I said, hospitality, premium packages, if you wanted a group or corporation wanted to get in on it, that can be certainly fun. It's a different type of experience. FIFA hospitality program, or you can go on location, or you can get it at LSSE.net. That's another place you can get it. I think you can get it through the Houston Dynamo as well. I would be careful with resale. Like, again, if it's not somebody that's well-known or a company that's well-known, every World Cup, there are scams, and there are people that have their hearts broken. So just be aware if you're going outside of the official and you're going to a resale platform, make sure you're going with somebody that's pretty noted. Maybe you've bought concert tickets or something from them before. So the prices are going to vary based on, obviously, seats, demand. The standard group tickets are expected to start at around $60. Up to several hundred and even more. So we'll see. For guaranteed access and best prices, you would probably go to the FIFA official ticketing site, register if you haven't already, and then you get in on the draws and the sale windows. So again, 7 matches in Houston, 5 in the group stage, 2 in the knockout, all at Energy Stadium, all between June 14th and July 4th. We're going to have a huge economic impact down here. What they're saying is $1.5 billion, expecting 500,000 visitors, be people from all over the world here. They're going to be going all over town. They're going to go to our museums. They're going to go to our parks. They're going to check out stores. They're going to check out restaurants. They're going to stay in hotels. They're going to want to go to the Damon Neal Museum. They're going to want to go to the Museum of Fine Arts. They want to go see maybe Memorial Park one day. There's a lot of great sites. NASA will probably be quite popular, I would think. All the museums in the downtown area. So you'll continue to see the key upgrades, and all of that will continue on. Okay? So it's a little bit of an update. Now I want to take you a little bit into the history of the 1982 World Cup in Spain. Reason why this one was important to me, because as I've told you on the show before, in 1974, I went to see the World Cup final in Madison Square Garden. It was only on closed circuit TV. It was West Germany, Franz Beckenbauer against Johan Cruyff in the Netherlands. West Germany won it, made a big impression. Well, fast forward to 1982. I got some college teammates from Newcastle, England. So I'm in England, training and playing in their top amateur leagues and some games. And I will tell you, I was getting in a fist fight every other day over there. I think everybody wanted to take a shot at an American, but there was a lot of unemployment during that time period too. So we'd go to these like athletic clubs and there'd be all these pickup games and there'd always be some kind of a fight. I looked at my two friends finally said, what the heck is going on here? Why is every guy want to take a poke at me? But most of the people were nice, but there were a few of those, I would say probably four or five in the time period I was over there. Anyway, 1982, Italy wins the championship. They defeat West Germany 3-1. Final, it was at the Santiago Bernabeu in Madrid. The interesting note here, this was Italy's third World Cup title, their first since 38. This was another expanded tournament, 82, to 24 teams for the first time. So they went from 16 to 24. And as we know, we're going to 48 this go-round. That's a lot. The penalty shootout was used to decide a match in this for the first time. That was the semifinal between West Germany and France. And then you had a number of teams making their debut in this World Cup. Algeria, Cameroon, Honduras, Kuwait, and New Zealand. So everybody remembers Paolo Rossi. Paolo Rossi was banned from soccer for a while due to match fixing. He ended up being the tournament's standout player. Scored key goals. He had a hat trick against Brazil in the second round, which was legendary. Then he had two goals in the final. The other semifinal between West Germany and France ended 3-3. That went into extra time. And that was the famous, and you'll remember this, this is a scary moment. Harald Schumacher was the goalkeeper for West Germany. He came flying off his line. To challenge a ball, Patrick Battiston of France just absolutely got crushed by him. I mean, it was incredibly violent, and nothing really ever happened. I'm seeing the play in my mind right now as I'm doing the show. It's horrible. You know, Italy, again, was noted for great collective defending. Claudio Gentile was their butcher who was chopping a lot of people down. Argentina got eliminated in the second round. Remember, they had won in 78, which we talked about on the last show. And La Chelona and El Salvador were in this, and Mexico Gonzalez. They had not a memorable moment. That was memorable. They got to the World Cup big time, and they were national heroes, but they got beat 10-1 by Hungary in the group stage. So the 82 World Cup, as I've illustrated, had violence, had some very questionable refereeing. FIFA would offer this tournament now begin to put new regulations in to control the brutal nature of the game. And let's be honest, in 1982, 78, these time periods, game was brutal in many cases. You could get away with things that you can't possibly get away with now. And I don't say that in a positive way. I just, you know, every team had a hammer at the back that their job was to put a physical beat down on the technical and tactical player, which can't really do that nowadays quite as much because you're going to get punished pretty quickly and with VAR in effect, everything else. But there were great matches in this one. There were dramatic moments, a lot of talents that came out. And I want to go back to Paolo Rossi because, again, Rossi was picked to play on the Italian national team. And he became one of the greatest stars in the history of the World Cup. He had six goals. He got the golden boot and got the golden ball as the best player as well. He scored 58% of Italy's goals in this World Cup. And by the way, he started slow. Okay? He won the golden ball, but did not score in any of the group stage matches, which if you look in history and you read about this World Cup, Italy kind of staggered through the group stages. Then he hit for the hat trick against Brazil. That was a 3-2 victory. And then in the semifinals, he scores both against Poland. And in the final, he gets the opener against Germany. And they go on to win 3-1. But, you know, I guess you become a leader when you start scoring key goals, right? So he was called a big-time leader in this one. So Italy wins their third tournament at that time, equaling Brazil in the 1982 World Cup in Spain. So I was in Newcastle, England, and I was able to grab the flavor of it over there, being in a soccer and footballing nation like England. I was staying with a gentleman named Stan Nixon and his family. I had a couple of college teammates, Ian McDonald, who's been a college coach, and Sean Green, and I stayed at their families as well. Very memorable, and I'm always grateful to those two guys for giving me the opportunity to be over there. Enzo Berzot, by the way, took the chance on Paolo Rossi to bring him into the team. And he coached Italy from 75 to 1986. And that was considered a little bit controversial that he was bringing Paolo Rossi in, because basically, you know, he had this history of match fixing and had gotten banned from the game and everything else. Pretty typical, you know, 4-4-2s, 4-3-1-2, pretty typical type of structures that were going on. Berzot's team was a pretty fluid 4-4-2, and strong defense with capitalizing on opportunities. All right, so there's a little bit on the 1982 World Cup. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to remind you that this show is presented by Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, brought to you by Methodist Hospital, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta, and the newest of sponsors, it is Visit Sugarland. When we come back, a re-air of last night's interview with Jack McGlynn. You're going to want to hear this, because this is a young man who may very well be going to the World Cup with the United States next summer. He is Jack McGlynn of the Houston Dynamo, coming up next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. Presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta, and Visit Sugarland. I hope you enjoyed Soccer Matters last night. It was a lot of fun. In studio was Federico DeMichelis. We had Houston Dynamo Director of Soccer Operations, Pat Onstad, and also the talented midfielder, Jack McGlynn, who has a real good shot of making it to World Cup 2026. By the way, we have 7 games here in Houston, including 5 in the group stages, 2 in the knockout stages at the legendary Energy Stadium. So hope you enjoyed it last night. It was a lot of fun. We gave a pair of tickets away as well. And we're in the midst of another night of great soccer talk. And I'm glad to say we've been on the air for 22 years talking the great game of soccer. So we'll give ourselves a little thumbs up. All right. A reminder, get the podcasts of both Soccer Matters and Destination 2026 at ESPN975.com. You can also get it at Spotify Podcasts and at Apple Podcasts. Now, speaking of last night, Jack McGlynn, again, has been called into recent U.S. national team matches, came off the bench in the 2-0 victory over Japan. He was on the Gold Cup team. He's a good bet to make the national team roster for the World Cup in 2026. I'm going to re-air his interview from last night. In this interview, we discuss his role at the Dynamo, the burgeoning relationship he's having with the young electric German winger Lawrence Anali to go along with Griffin Dorsey on the right side of the field. Then he discusses what it would mean to him to make the World Cup and much, much more. Here is my interview with Jack McGlynn.
Well, let's take you back to the last game and just the more open nature of this game. Does that happen because of urgency? Does that happen because of the time of year? Is that contrived by the staff? How did that all work?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of all three. I think, obviously, you know where we are on the table, the time of the year, how many games we have left, and we kind of have to push now. We have to win. We can't settle for ties, especially being at home. I think we have to be the ones on the front foot. And I think you saw that, especially in the first half. We kind of came out flying at them, and I'm lucky not to get a goal early, but we got one in the end. But yeah, I think that's kind of how we have to take these games. We have to go after teams. We have to be the ones creating chances, and we're going to do that those last three games.
Was this a more enjoyable game to you? Because it seemed like it was a lot more open. You got a lot of chances in this game, even off your right foot a lot. Did it seem more enjoyable if we just take out the urgency of the situation?
Yeah, for sure. I think number one reason why is we won, so that's definitely why it's more enjoyable. But I try to enjoy every time I play. I always like to have fun. I just always think back to kind of being a kid and like I'm playing professional now. You have to enjoy the moment. So I kind of take that in every game, but especially in games like that where I'm on the ball, I'm creating things, I'm getting chances. Hopefully one of them will go in on my right soon. But, yeah, I think it's definitely more enjoyable in a game like that.
Yeah, you had a lot of involvement in this one. You had a lot of great chances. You had the assist on the lone goal to Ezequiel Ponce as well. You know, was this – I mean, you got a lot of space at the top of the box. I was a little surprised how, you know, Portland maybe, when they recovered, got a little bit deep on top of their goalkeeper. I mean, you were just – coming into great spaces a bit late. Maybe take us into that a little bit.
Yeah, I think with who we had in the field, obviously knowing Lawrence, he's going to beat his guy most times than not. And I think I'm kind of always working off their other midfielder. When he checks his shoulder to see where I am, I'm always trying to make a different movement to get open. I think I did that pretty well last game, finding good spots rather than I was combining, either finding Griffin in behind or having a shot on my right. And yeah, I think it worked well. I think I'm always just trying to make counter movements off where they think I'll be, and that'll give me space.
He's Jack McGlynn, Houston Dynamo midfielder, also U.S. men's national team, joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. What type of an effect has Lawrence had personally on your game? Because now he's gotten four straight starts in a row. This team just seems to ooze a little bit more danger now.
Yeah, I think for me personally, I'm a guy that I like to pass first. And I think having a guy that can stretch the game like that, it kind of opens up, whether it's space for me or Ponce or someone, it just opens up space, whether we can stretch a team, make them face their own goal, play behind them or play through them. Now that we have that threat, I think that kind of helps all of us, especially being in the middle. And yeah, I found him a good amount of times, whether in behind or to his feet, where he's able to beat someone or dribbling, create something dangerous. So it definitely brings a different aspect to us, and it's been dangerous these last couple of games.
I hear a lot of people talk about this a lot, but you got to find somebody to play with within the game and in your team. Not that you're not playing with the other guys on your team, but you got to find a bit of a partner. Is Lawrence that guy, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say I definitely have a couple. I think obviously a partnership with Griffin on the right side, I think last game was really strong. I think whether I'm overlapping him or he's getting in behind me and I can kind of find him in behind the fullback where he can have a first-time cross, I think that's been working. I think I have a good connection with Ponce. It's been getting better throughout the year. We don't really have to speak a lot, but kind of just looking at each other, you know what each other will do. So it's building those partnerships. And I think, obviously, it's my first year here, and we'll see what happens next year with that. But I think through the year, it's grown a lot with a lot of different guys.
So I have a lot of conversations. Some people say to me, they go, wow, Jack McGlynn, he doesn't look like he's like – they don't understand your composure and your demeanor on the field. And I think they mistake it for like, you know, that you're a little bit relaxed, which I know you're not. And I see it as a defense mechanism in some ways for you as an attacking player. So maybe settle the score with those.
Yeah, I think people can say all they want. I know what I can do. I know that I'm a good creator in this league. I think I know the quality I have and what I can bring to a team. And I think I've been showing that, especially in the recent games. But yeah, people can say I'm slow or whatever. It doesn't really affect me. I know, and my teammates know what I can do.
Well, for the record, they all like you as a player, but I said, hey, just because he's not screaming and yelling and his face is red doesn't mean he's not effective.
Yeah,
So,
no,
don't worry. I went to bat for you there. Don't worry.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And I said, if you had a left foot like that, you can behave any way you want, as long as the results are there. Talking to Jack McGlynn, Houston Dynamo. By the way, new sponsor, it is Slip Sliders. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Nashville and the type of game that they bring and sort of the boost also that you guys have gotten from a confidence standpoint getting this win over Portland.
Yeah, getting the win was definitely huge. I think it's been a long time coming, especially being at home in front of our fans, where we've just been bad. I think that's not who we are and who we want to be in front of our fans. It hasn't been good enough. But to get that and going into a tough road game now, where I think we've been pretty solid on the road, but we have to start with a good mentality. I think we've had that the last couple of road games and just be hard to play against. And then we have quality that can get us chances and goals on the road.
So Nashville, they certainly are a team that can break in transition. You just played one in Portland. You seem to do pretty well against them. Thoughts on playing these transition-based teams? I think we'd throw LAFC in there with Sun now.
Yeah, for sure. They're tough to play against because I think we're a team that wants the ball, and knowing that they could hurt you when you lose that ball, it's dangerous. But I think last game especially, we covered for it pretty well. I think we gave up a couple of chances at the end of the game, but other than that, I think our center backs kind of dealt with it really well. We didn't lose the ball in bad spots really, but it's just kind of being clean, being confident, and knowing the quality we have in our locker room to play through teams like that.
Is it tough? I would think it's tough playing with a 1-0 lead and slimmer margins. I mean, I look at that game and I go, that's a game you guys could have 2-3 goals. It would have been more comfortable at the end. That seems to be an equation that you guys have not been able to solve yet.
Yeah, it's obviously tougher playing 1-0 up, but I think you got to think it's better than being down 1-0 or tying a game. It's definitely better to be in the lead. You obviously want that. But yeah, I think definitely last game especially could have finished them off earlier. I think could have had 2 or 3 goals, whether it was myself or setting someone up. I think, yeah, we definitely had a lot of good chances, but I think as we get more clinical, it'll keep helping us.
All right, for the young players out there, how much do you work on going to your right?
A lot, yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, because I don't use it as much, they don't know that it's there. But I think I work on it probably every day after training, just getting a couple reps on it and knowing that it's there, and I'm comfortable enough to take shots with it, especially because teams are focused on me going left.
No, I think one is destined to go in here very soon. Jack, we talk about weight training, and I know I'm getting this interview with you after you did a weight session. And I know you're monitored by your staff and everything, but is there ever a concern that, your muscles get too tight and shorter? And because I know you guys do a lot of weight sessions and you do have to be strong and powerful in the game, but to be flexible and technical is also important.
Yeah, for sure. I think here it's a good balance. I think I specifically have like a plan with the trainers here that I do work with what I need, whether it's speed work, agility work. So it's all kind of individualized to how you're feeling. And if you come in one day saying you're sore, you're going to do a little less in the gym, but maybe you get more touches. So it's a good balance, especially myself. I do a lot of my own at home, whether it's going to the gym at night or if I didn't get enough touches in training, I'll go get touches after. It's just always doing more because I'm still a young guy. I can't really complain about being sore too much. But yeah, just I'm always trying to do more.
Yeah, the veterans are going to give you a hard time, right? If you complain too much since they've been
Exactly,
through
exactly,
it,
exactly.
they'll jump on that one in a New York minute, I'm pretty sure. Off the field, and again, this one is for those aspiring out there. Off the field, give us a bit of your routine, rest, all the things, because I know a lot of effort has to go into being disciplined off the field.
Yeah, for sure. I think off the field, I'm just a really relaxed guy. I mean, I come home from training, and like I said before, if I don't feel like I did enough, I'm always going to go do more, whether it's going to like a local field or something, just kind of get touches and just feel sharp like I did enough on the day. And at night, I usually will go into the gym, whether it's doing mobility, stretching, or whatever I didn't really do in the gym that day, I'll do it at night. But That's kind of my routine. It's very disciplined. I stick to it every day, and I try not to break it a lot.
How much soccer do you watch, and what are your preferred leagues? Like, do you like watching some of your national team teammates? Tell us.
Yeah. I watch whenever there's a game on, I have it on, no matter really what the league. Obviously, I probably watch mostly the Prem. I'm a big Liverpool fan, so that's kind of for me. But, yeah, with the national team guys, I always try to keep up on what they're doing. Those are some of my best friends, so whenever you get a chance to watch them, you definitely want to do that.
So you might watch Chris Richards with Crystal Palace, or you might watch Christian Pulisic tearing apart Udinese the other day in 62 minutes?
Yeah. They're both performing at such a high level, and especially being off the field, they're such great guys to look up to. So to kind of watch them and see how they carry on in each game in such difficult leagues is inspiring.
By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Griffin Dorsey and that relationship and what he brings to you. It must be comforting to know you have him alongside you.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think knowing he's always behind me, covering for me, and that kind of gives me freedom to try stuff. And like last game where I try a flip pass to Lawrence, like knowing that I have cover behind me, if that doesn't come off, like it's kind of given me a lot of confidence to do things and create things for us. And knowing he's going to be up and down the wing, flying by, whether I play him through or he's just kind of dragging a defender out for me, the work he does is so selfless, and he's just a great guy to have.
Yeah, he's done extremely well, Griffin Dorsey. All right, so let's go back to that. Is that the play you mean where Lawrence came central and made the run and you kind of scooped it in behind the defense, the real delicate ball?
Yeah.
So take us through that one, because that was some five-star entertainment. I like that.
Yeah, no, I know Lawrence, when he cuts in, he's either looking to shoot or I know he'll find me at the top of the box like he did in Austin. So I found a good spot there, and I saw that they're all looking at me expecting a shot, because that's kind of what I'm good at. And then I saw that he was still on sides because the right back was a bit deeper, and I flipped it, and he's quick enough to get on the end of that, and I'm lucky that it didn't go in. It was just wide.
Yeah, that might have been up for goal of the week. That was a great sequence, and it was also pretty amazing because he was very aware, you know, of where the line was for them, and he actually stopped himself for a split second, and then, you know, you played that beautiful ball in behind. That would have been a spectacular goal. All right, Switch gears here to the national team. How about the importance of the win over Japan?
It's huge. I think, to get a win finally, I think it was a tough game for us against Korea. I think it was a decent performance, but the result obviously isn't what we want in front of our fans. But I think whenever you get to win a game for your country, it means more. I think you're playing for more than just yourself. So to get a win over a really good side like that was huge for us.
Yeah, so how much of that noise do you hear from the fans? I mean, it somehow has to trickle through with social media and everything, but how much of that noise do you hear?
Yeah, you hear some of it, but, I mean, when you're in the camp, you're just focused on what's going on there. You're not looking at outside. You're just focused on performing there, doing everything you can to help the team, whether it's in training or coming off the bench, starting a game. You just always want to help, and I think it was a really good performance from the whole team against Japan.
Yeah, it was. It was excellent against Japan. The boot is really, really good. Do you speak with Mauricio Pochettino when you're away from the national team? In other words, during your MLS season?
Not really. I think it's more like, you know what's expected of you. You kind of leave camp with an idea of where you're at, and what's expected is to kind of be the best at your club. And that'll eventually, if you're performing, hopefully get you a call up. That's kind of, it's an expectation. There's no real need to be in constant talk. You know what you have to do to get to that level.
Yeah, you came off the bench in that game and produced very well and nearly scored a goal for the U.S. That was a spectacular little stretch of play you had. You know, as opposed to the Dynamo, where you're starting and you're a focal point of the team for 90 minutes, is that a little different, getting yourself into a game and a good challenge?
It's definitely different, but it's something I've kind of taken on. I think that was my role in the summer in the Gold Cup. So I just try to come on, work my socks off, whether it's defensively, if we're up a goal or we're chasing a goal, just trying to create things. I think, yeah, I was unlucky that goal didn't went in, but I was happy with the way those games went.
Now, you do know, and I've said this to you before in a lot of our interviews, and I'm getting very comfortable interviewing you. You do know that you're one of the rare American players that are actually, quote unquote, a traditional or maybe semi non-traditional playmaker in the league. You do realize that, right?
Yeah. It's I think it's rare, but I'm happy to be one of them.
Yeah. And I would say congratulations to the Dynamo in respecting your talents and placing you in a position with that sort of confidence.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I think the trust they've had on me ever since they bought me, I think, has been amazing, whether I was playing deeper or now higher up where I'm kind of more of a creator. I think that the trust they have in me to play me every game and rely on me to create has been great.
All right. I'm sure it's twofold right now. It's get into the playoffs with the Dynamo, but I have to think that almost every day you think about the World Cup.
Yeah, it's hard not to, you know, especially it being in our home country and coming up so soon. It's hard not to, and that's definitely a huge goal for me.
Jack, what would it mean to go to the World Cup?
Everything. I mean, it's every kid's dream to play in the World Cup, and to even say I have a chance of being there, it makes me feel amazing. It just makes me want to work harder because I'm going to do everything I can to help my team here or help the team there if I get the chance. It's just it'll be such an honor, and I'm going to do everything I can to be on that roster.
Well, you're a gem of a player. There's one thing you know about Jack McGlynn. You bleed 100% football, soccer. There's no question about that. And you're talented. Keep up all the great work. Thank you very much for closing out our show tonight here in big style.
Yes, sir, man. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, you really have to love this young man for the passion and respect that he gives to soccer in his career. You can see it by the way he carries himself. He's got a cultured left foot, has worked on going to his right a lot, as you saw in the last game against Portland, the 1-0 victory. And he's succeeding. And he's in this beautiful place as a young player where you have a large upsize, you're recognizing it, and each and every day, and I hope there are youth players listening, you're trying to make your game better. He's trying to make his game better. And this, I will tell you, is the beautiful process of being an athlete. Every day is a new day to train and get better. All right, let's take a break. Hey, last night we had our new sponsor, Slip Sliders, down on Bins. All kinds of sliders, if you like them, get down there. And we'll take a break and we'll come back. We got more here on Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy Quanta, and Visit Sugarland.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the night tonight as we continue on here. It's Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, brought to you by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy Quanta, and our newest of sponsors, that is Visit Sugarland. So congratulations to Sugarland being one of the host cities here within Houston as we get ready to host the World Cup. All right, our next guest, we're going to get some World Cup recollection from our next guest. He played professionally on the Houston Dynamos in the 80s. A great friend of mine, for full disclosure, has been the longtime coach of Strait Jesuit High School, was also the athletic director there, has well over 600 wins in high school soccer. He's essentially, to me, he's a high school soccer legend here in the state of Texas. From Strait Jesuit, he is Bill McDonald. Bill, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, Glenn, thanks for having me on.
Okay, so we're trying to get all the leaders in Houston on this show to kind of get their memories of the World Cup. I started off with you. When did the World Cup become significant to you and at what age?
Well, it was the early 80s, I guess, the 82 World Cup. I was actually in college, but working in Philadelphia and able to dial it up on the old UHF dial. If anybody still knows what that means, I guess just people, you and my age and older.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was in Spanish in Philadelphia.
So that's the first time you're aware of it. What during that tournament, that was 1982 in Spain. In the first segment tonight, I spoke about the 82 World Cup in Spain. That was the one Italy won. Paolo Rossi became the big star. He didn't score in the group stages, but scored against Brazil, Poland, and then in the final. What jumped out about 1982 to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, watching the Italian team in on a fuzzy channel that came in and came out in a different language, but just getting the ability to, you know, get a sense of the magnitude of the World Cup and what it meant to people around the world. We really, on a broad scale, didn't have that here in the United States, and I was just soaking it up.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because, and we're talking to Bill McDonald, straight Jesuit coach, former professional soccer player. It's interesting because, you know, for us to see, I mean, it's amazing for us to look through our lens now and see how much soccer is available. I mean, I got Polish soccer on my TV. I got the Turkish League. I got everything, not just the Premier League, right? You do too. Everybody does. But it was harder to find information on soccer. We scrambled around for magazines and any bits of information we could get. In my case, me and my buddies and your former teammate at Penn State, Dan Canner, we would take trains and subways to Brooklyn, New York, to go to some little Italian guy's small shop to get the best pair of soccer boots we could, you know, the Puma Kings or whatever it was, you know, the Pelé Kings. So it really is pretty amazing to see, you know, sort of where we were kind of gatherers back then of soccer information. Now it's overwhelming.
It is. And, you know, actually that kind of continued, Glenn, you know, fast forward, you know, 5 or 6 years, and you and I are here in Houston, and the 86 World Cup's going on, and we're doing the same type of thing. I was, I think the name of the place was called the Tam O'Shanter, and it was just a bar, you know, here and off of Hillcroft, and that's where a lot of people that wanted to see the games gathered and watch the games. I remember that very fondly.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, and we actually had a teammate on that 86. I mean, it's when the leagues were struggling. We were playing a lot of exhibition games against teams and friendlies. But we had, I remember Bill Irwin, one of our goalkeepers, who was Irish, flew down to Mexico City to be with the Irish national team and be down there to support him. I remember that distinctively. But it was a tough time to find out about the game, but we were digging around everywhere we possibly could. All right, let's fast forward now. 94 World Cup comes to the United States. Greatest World Cup ever at that time, may still be. Games everywhere. We had Cotton Bowl close to us. The final was in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena between Brazil and Italy. So take me into the 94 World Cup and your experiences.
So, yeah, just like what we've already talked about, that kind of lead or build up, you know, then finally, you know, finding out that the United States was going to get the 94 World Cup, that was incredible. And you look around, you start to see some buy-in, some, you know, some of that enthusiasm start to build that I saw back in the early 80s. And it was actually happening here in the United States. And here in Houston, people were talking about it. And, you know, so I was actually working here at Strake Jesuit and also an assistant coach for the Houston Hotshots at the time. And so, you know, I'm looking at it, and the game's up in Dallas. I bought tickets and drove up to Dallas 5 times for different games. And then during our schedule for the Houston Hotshots, I noticed that we're playing the Washington Warthogs in D.C., and there's a game.
Wait. Washington Warthogs. Oh, yeah. I remember them. Was it Christine Lilly on that team, the women's player?
She was. Yes, she was.
Christine Lilly was on that team. Jim Gabara was the coach.
Yes, that's exactly right.
You and I played against. Yeah, so 94 was when I first broke into broadcasting, calling Houston Hotshots games. Okay, Washington Warthogs, one of the greatest.
Yeah, so I'm there in Washington. I jump out of the team vans or buses and join a bunch of my friends from Philadelphia and take in a great game. I can't even think of that stadium's name where the Redskins played. Oops, I shouldn't say Redskins either.
No, Redskins are all right. I mean, that was, it's Commanders now. Get it right.
Commanders, that's correct.
Get it right. All right, so 94 World Cup. This was, again, an expansion up to 24 teams. No, sorry. Yeah, 24 teams, I think, were in this. We're in the 94 World Cup. Ronaldo, the obviously Brazil is led by Bebeto, Romário up front. Those are the guys. But I remember in the team picture after they win it in penalty kicks against Italy, Roberto Baggio missing one of the penalties. I remember in the Rose Bowl because I was there. And then the next day looking at the team picture of them after winning it, and there's an 18-year-old Ronaldo on the Brazilian national team, and they simply brought him there to get used to what the World Cup was like.
Yeah, and the last game that I saw in before they were in that final was in Dallas against the Netherlands, and just a fantastic game. I'm there outside the stadium celebrating the game and the result, and you know, I'm running into, I would say, hundreds of people from Houston that made that trip up to Dallas to see the game. It was awesome. Great atmosphere.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. It was a great time period. The time period we went through, you know, it's funny. Everybody's reference point is different. So, you know, even the guys in the early years of MLS, even up to 2006 when we got the team, MLS was very different than it is today. They feel like pioneers, but then everybody in front of them or behind them feels like pioneers because everybody went through different things as the game continued to grow. So Brazil wins the 94 World Cup. Baggio misses a penalty. It was at the Rose Bowl. The tournament set records for overall attendance, 3.5 million. Was the total average attendance per game was 68. And there were three debut teams, Greece, Nigeria, first one for the Super Eagles.
But Glenn,
I
think the crowning jewel though is, you know, over and above those stats, it was, the people in all the cities here in the United States that were able to, you know, have that experience, absorb what people around the world have been absorbing for many years. And you talk about those players and those groups that have, you know, think they, you know, whatever, they were the start of the game. Well, we're all the benefit of what has taken place over all these years right now. And, you know, that's what makes me look forward to 2026.
48 teams, too many for you?
Well, yeah, I can't say that I'm a big fan of that change. I'm pretty much a traditionalist. I wish it would have stayed the way it was. But, you know, if it goes like a lot of other changes that have happened in the last, whatever, couple decades, like the Commanders and the R word that I said earlier, you know, we'll forget all about it and we'll all be watching anyway.
Romário was one of the tournament stars in 94, and I went to the final, and I never forget. Every ball he picked up around the penalty area, he drove right at an Italian defender. Every single time, he was a direct line trying to get to goal. He had Bebeto with him. Those guys were tearing the tournament up. Wasn't the greatest final ever in history. It ended 0-0 and then went to penalty kicks. All right, let's move on to 1998. We're talking to Bill McDonald, Strake Jesuit. You're overseas. You're going to 98 in France now.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. Again, I aligned with a bunch of friends from the Philadelphia area where I grew up. There was about 24 of us that made the trip over to France. We spent 7 days in the Paris area and went to games in Paris and in Lyon. And maybe one other city, I can't remember. But, you know, we also then got on a train, and we were lucky enough to, on that train from Paris to Nice, get in with about 30 or 40 Dutch fans that were traveling. They all had a 12-pack of beer each in their hands, and had a great ride down to Nice where we stayed. There were no games, obviously, in Nice, but we were going over to Marseille for games. And, you know, I was pretty lucky, Glenn. I told you already, I got to see Brazil and Holland in Dallas in the 94 World Cup. I was also in attendance for Brazil and Holland in the French World Cup in 98. So
wow.
just got to see some amazing soccer players and you know, great play on the field. I also was in attendance for the night where the infamous David Beckham got his red card in the French World Cup.
Oh, against Diego Simeone of Argentina?
Correct, yes.
Okay, now I'm not taking any kind of offense-sitting answer when I ask you this next question, so don't play this safe. Did he deserve to be sent off, or did Simeone embellish this?
Yeah, well, you know, fence-sitter I am a lot of times. I mean, both of those things, in my opinion, happened, but I think it was the action and intent of David Beckham that got him the desired result, and I'm sorry, deserved result. So
okay, all right. So you think Beckham should have been sent off? English fans really turned on him after that. By the way, France won their first World Cup. They defeat the defending champions Brazil 3-0 in the finals. Zinedine Zidane had two headers off corner kicks. Emmanuel Petit, you'll remember him with the ponytail, had a goal in stoppage time. There was some real weird stuff going on with Ronaldo before the final. I mean, to some degree, it was a surprising loss. Everybody thought Brazil was going to win. There was some uncertainty around Ronaldo, and he left the starting lineup due to some kind of a health scare. I don't really ever know what happened there, but 36 billion television viewers globally. So it was a big deal in France, and you were there.
And Glenn, one thing I want to mention is that both in Dallas and in Paris, you know, just the in Paris, it was the Hotel de Ville, which is basically City Hall, I guess, but a square in the middle of town. And, you know, when you don't have a ticket to a game, you head to that place and you're with so many passionate fans of different countries. The experience is absolutely incredible. Dallas was pretty much around the stadium area, if I recall it right. But, you know, outside there, just to, I mean, that's where the State Fair of Texas is. So, you know, just on those grounds, just packed with people having a great time and good food, good fun, just unbelievable. And so, you know, I'll be honest, I'm looking forward to experiencing that in the city I call home, Houston, Texas.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So just I want to remind people of some of the other stars of that tournament. Davor Suker of Croatia, remember him? He had 6 goals. Incredible striker. Christian Vieri had 5 for Italy. There was Dennis Bergkamp, who had the last-minute goal for the Netherlands against Argentina. Marcel Desailly, I mean, what a rock at the back for France, along with Thuram. You had Gabriel Batistuta of Argentina. He had 5 in the tournament. Thierry Henry was young at that time and growing into the tournament. And then you had that crazy, amazing goal from Michael Owen. Do you remember that one for England?
Yeah.
That goal. Who else? We had Luis Hernandez from Mexico. Rivaldo from Brazil. I mean, you know, Rivaldo doesn't even get mentioned in this with this Brazil squad, but it was big. All right. So last thing before I let you go, Bill, and I want to thank you very much as a friend for coming on the show and doing this, because you've had a big impact here in the Houston soccer community, and I do want people to know that about you as well. So what does it mean to you that we're going to have 7 games here and comes kind of full circle? It's coming in your backyard.
Yeah, what it means to me, I mean, you know, it's one, you know, one of the things I look for in life to enjoy. My whole life has been around the game of soccer in different ways. And, you know, this is one where I can just sit back and say, wow, this is really neat. This is what I like to, you know, to be around. And so, yeah, as I already mentioned, I want to be in the area. I want to be around the games. I want to be at the games. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it.
Bill, thanks so much for coming on tonight. We appreciate it. Thanks for giving the insight into the 94, the 98 World Cups. Houston's getting ready for it. We're getting excited. It's getting closer and closer. Thanks for all you have done for soccer in Houston, Texas.
You got it.
All right. That's Bill McDonald, Strake Jesuit head coach, who's also been the athletic director there. Played professionally here from Pennsylvania, played his college soccer at Penn State as well, and had two brothers that were also professional soccer players, which is pretty crazy from one family. Last note on the 98 World Cup. I just want to remind you that that was another year where it jumped from 24 to 32 teams. All right, you get the podcast of this show, ESPN975.com. You can also go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts to get it. Again, a big thank you to everybody for tuning in. This is Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. It's brought to you by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Quanta Energy, and Visit Sugarland. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. Give us feedback. We want it. Each and every week, it's Tuesday's Soccer Matters. It's Wednesday's Destination 2026. On behalf of everybody tuning in live tonight and via the podcast, I'm Glenn Davis. Thanks for listening in.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.